Tensions are high once again between Russia and Ukraine. Moscow is deploying troops along the border and Kiev is warning of a possible invasion. But what's triggered this crisis and can it be contained? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Imran Khan. Ukraine is accusing Russia of mobilising tens of thousands of soldiers near their shared border. The movement of Russia's 41st Army units has raised fears a military offensive might be on the way. It's the second time this year Moscow has amassed combat-ready forces in the region. On Friday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Russia was planning a coup to overthrow his government. Moscow rejected those allegations and blamed Kiev and the US for the escalating tensions. President Joe Biden says he's likely to speak to both leaders to ease the dispute. Russia seized Ukraine's Crimea region in 2014 and backs separatist territories in the east. NATO has warned Moscow that any attempt to invade Ukraine would have serious consequences. We'll get to our guests shortly, but first, this update from Charles Stratford in eastern Ukraine.
Russia's intentions, of course, remain unclear, but one thing is certain, and that's Moscow continuously denying that it has any intention of invading Ukraine. And that's the kind of language, the kind of accusations that are being made by certain Western leaders and the international media, language that the Kremlin has described as being both malicious and hysterical. We also know, though, that President Putin is very unhappy with the Ukrainian leadership here, describing it as foot-dragging in implementing its side of a peace agreement signed in 2015, an agreement that many analysts say is very much weighted in Russia's favour and could potentially give Russia too much control of Ukrainian internal affairs. Meanwhile, the international community, Ukraine's allies in NATO, the US, France and Germany, for example, warning Russia of serious consequences if indeed there was to be a further escalation. But it remains to be seen just how far they would go to protect Ukraine if indeed such a disaster was to happen. Charles Stratford for Inside Story in Avdiivka, eastern Ukraine.
The annexation of Crimea in 2014 worsened ties between the West and Russia. Moscow seized the region from Ukraine in March 2014, prompting international condemnation and sanctions. And the following month, war broke out in eastern Ukraine between Russian-backed separatists and the Ukrainian army. More than 13,000 people have been killed in the fighting, and at one point, about 1.5 million people were displaced. Now, in 2015, France and Germany brokered a peace agreement, but efforts to reach a political settlement have failed. Let's bring in our guests. Joining us live from Kiev, Alexey Haran, a professor at the Kiev Mulya Academy and the director of research at Democratic Initiatives Foundation. From Fairfax, Virginia, John Herbst. He's the senior director of the Atlantic Council's Eurasian Center and a former US ambassador to the Ukraine. And from Moscow, Pavel Felgenhauer. He's a defense and military analyst and a columnist for Nova Gazeta. A warm welcome to you all. Let's begin in Kiev first with Alexey Haran. There's no way Vladimir Putin is actually going to invade, is he?
Well, we don't know. We don't know what are the calculations of Putin. We need to know that actually Putin invaded Ukraine in 2014. He annexed Crimea in violation of all the international agreements, including Russian-Ukrainian treaty, and then he moved his regular troops in Donbass, in the east of Ukraine. So Putin invaded Ukraine, Russian troops are there, and despite all the agreements that were signed regarding ceasefire, and the first ceasefire was signed in 2014, the next in 2015. You have numerous ceasefires now, you have also ceasefire, but I've just checked the report, the daily report of Special Monitoring Mission of OSCE, Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, and just yesterday, there were 800 violations of ceasefire, one day. So basically, there is ongoing Russian-Ukrainian war with ups and downs. We don't see a large military offensive right now, but at any time, there could be possibility of that.
But so, Alexei, what you're saying is effectively the war never ended from 2014, that there's been continuing violations.
Yeah, I see that you are sincerely surprised, but this is a fact. Because as I have said, Crimea is occupied, and in Donbass, one-third of Donbass, which is around 2% of Ukrainian territory, is occupied by Russia and its puppet regimes. And there are violations every day, and Ukrainian soldiers and civilians are being killed.
Well, let's bring in Pavel Felgenhauer here from Moscow. What do you make of those comments, that the war never ended, that civilians are dying every day?
Yes, it didn't really end. There is no political solution, and skirmishes have continued in the Donbas for many years already, though the line of control has not changed. So it's a kind of standing, it's a conflict. You can't call it fully frozen because skirmishes continue, but it's a very low level. But since there is no political solution, and right now there seems to be no meaningful negotiations even planned, and the Normandy so-called format has been also frozen, that means there's a possibility of escalation of the fighting, and the rhetoric on both sides is becoming increasingly toxic, I mean on all sides. And that's a very dangerous situation. It's not an imminent conflict, maybe escalation, but it's potentially very serious and could come in months or maybe even a number of weeks.
Pavel, just talk to me about Vladimir Putin's thinking. Why now and why this level of escalation?
Well, the level of escalation has been building up. During the years, and especially in the year 21, we're lucky that it didn't break out into a big regional war, but the threat is there. Moscow has said many times that there are red lines, that integration of Ukraine into NATO and the appearance of NATO-American military assets on Ukrainian territory is totally unacceptable for Russia, meaning that most likely Russia, in the last resort, is ready to go to war to prevent that. But there is a possibility of still resolving the thing without a confrontation, but with each passing month, the possibility of a regional war is growing.
Well, one of the players in the conflict will be, or is, in fact, Joseph Biden, the U.S. president. We have the former U.S. ambassador to the Ukraine, John Herbst, sat with us in Fairfax. John, I mean, he's in a rock and a hard place. Like, how does Biden deal with this? If he doesn't act on Ukraine, he's going to be seen as being weak. But if he does act, there's a threat to Russia there.
Look. I think Biden understands well the dangers of the current situation. Moscow launched an aggressive war against Ukraine in 2014, which continues to this day. They seized Crimea, and they began this covert military operation in Donbas. The covert military operation in Donbas was designed to pressure Kyiv to end its pursuit of a Western-leaning foreign policy. Putin's Operation Donbas has failed. His limited military aggression in Donbas has not moved Ukraine in the direction he wants. That's why he's threatening an escalation. Biden recognizes that an escalation would be a very bad thing for American interests. That's why he stated very clearly, and his Secretary of State and Secretary of Defense have stated very clearly, that there will be punishing additional sanctions on Russia if Putin escalates substantially. We are also sending more military supplies to Ukraine so that Ukraine will better be able to defend itself. Now, it's true, the Russian military is much stronger than the Ukrainian military, and Russia can probably seize any point in Ukraine it wants to if it uses its full conventional military forces, including its air force, including its navy. But it's also true that many Russian soldiers will die in that case. And the Russian public has said multiple times in polls conducted by the Levada Center, they don't want Russian troops fighting in Ukraine, and they don't want Russia to be fighting against Ukraine. So for Putin to escalate substantially is a very serious gamble. And Biden, I think, is speaking in clear and strong terms about what would happen if Putin doesn't.
In Kiev, Alexei, you've just heard what our guest in Virginia has had to say. Now, Ukraine gets a lot of military aid from the US government already. It's been getting it since 2014. It's got a partner, effectively, in the US. Is the US going to be able to be a broker for peace here, or do you think their role is it's far too complicated for that, for something as simple as that?
Look, first of all, we hear since 2014, we hear Russian propaganda that Russia needs to invade Ukraine because of threat from NATO. And this is totally a lie. Because before, actually, in 2014, Ukraine had non-bloc status. Supporters of NATO in Ukraine, we are always in minority. Because we Ukrainians believed that we could have good pragmatic relations with Russia. We had a treaty with Russia. We had a Budapest memorandum where Russia promised to be a guarantor of Ukrainian territorial integrity. So there were no talk about NATO in 2014. And then in 2014, Russian aggression started. And it completely changed the views of Ukrainians that we saw that in any case, even if Ukraine is outside of NATO, even if Ukraine is a neutral country, it doesn't prevent from Russian aggression. That's why definitely we need the support from the West. And we understand that nobody will fight for Ukraine because we are not in NATO. So what we are asking since 2014 is military help. Unfortunately, this military help was belated. President Obama didn't provide for this help. The Javelins, anti-tank weapons, Ukrainians started to receive only under Trump administration. So I would say that the military support is quite limited. And what Russia is saying that, oh, we had a red line because of NATO, because of American build-up in Ukraine, again, totally a lie, because Russian troops are inside Ukraine. Russia is occupying Ukraine. So what is important, definitely, at this point, is the increase of military support, first of all, and then, second point, to warn Russia about extension of economic sanctions. Now there are economic sanctions against Russia. What is important is to warn Putin that in case of attack, it will have dramatic consequences for Russia in economic sphere.
Let's bring in Pavel Folgenhauer here in Moscow. Where's the wiggle room? Where's the negotiation room here? If President Biden does follow up on his comment that he will speak to both the leaders of Kiev and Moscow in order to try and de-escalate the situation, what's he going to go in and negotiate?
Well, yes, there's a summit being prepared right now. Both Washington and Moscow, White House and the Kremlin are working on the agenda. It should happen before New Year. It's going to be virtual. It's going to be kind of, I don't know, maybe a screen and telephone conversation. But Ukraine is going to be very high on the agenda. Apparently, Moscow hopes that brinkmanship that's being right now used, a threat of a possible regional war with the threat of an escalation into all European or, I don't know, global conflict, that will move the United States to change somewhat its position, to put pressure on Kiev, to become more flexible and give Russia what it wants on the so-called Minsk agreements. So that's most likely right now going to be the thing. because there's a lot of talk of Russian forces on the border. They are there for some time already. But the time of year right now is wrong for any kind of major military escalation. A winter campaign can begin in second half of January, but not earlier than that. So now is the time for negotiations, and apparently they will be happening. But how intense and how effective they're going to be is not clear.
Well, let's bring in John Herbst here. I mean, our guest in Moscow says the negotiations are not clear, but they do need to happen. What can the Americans offer, and what would the Russians take in order to de-escalate? Can?
I don't think negotiations are necessary at all. I think what's needed is a strong warning to Putin about the nasty things that will happen to his cronies himself and Russia if, in fact, Putin escalates his aggression against Ukraine. And again, talking about major sanctions, talking about military assistance to Ukraine is the way to go. The war in Donbass could end when Putin decides that it's no longer in his interest. Then negotiations will be important. But negotiations aren't important right now. What's important right now is a strong stand. That becomes the basis for eventual negotiations. But Putin needs to meet with Biden in order not to escalate, that's fine. But what, again, the most important thing to prevent this from becoming a wider war is a very strong warning to Putin about the dangerous things that will happen to him, to Russia, if he, again, escalates aggression.
Yeah, but that only works if Biden actually follows through. I mean, you're giving the Javelin anti-tank defense systems already. You've got billions of dollars worth of military aid going to the Ukraine. All of those things, Russia says, actually have escalated the situation. Those need to be withdrawn, and then we might be able to talk. I mean, you've got to follow it through, right?
Right. But this, you see, what you just outlined is, I think, Pavel's logic. Pavel's logic is correct, that Putin is trying via brinksmanship to gain concessions. Why in the world should we accept this? You know, the situation around Ukraine is certainly dangerous, and it become more dangerous. But it's not as dangerous as the Berlin crisis in 1961, the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, when Kremlin brinksmanship brought the world to thermonuclear war, the threshold of thermonuclear war. We are much stronger than Russia today. There's no reason why we need to panic. So again, we produce a strong reaction. I think Biden is doing that. And then if the Russians want to talk, that's fine. But the most important thing is that strong reaction. So Putin knows the consequences, the nasty consequences for his team if, in fact, he escalates.
Alexei, I'm going to bring you in here in just a moment, but I do want to hear from Pavel in Moscow. What do you make of John Herb's comments?
We hear from here in Moscow different opinions coming out of Washington in the present situation, even from the Biden administration. But though, of course, there have been warnings, there have been contacts, there'll be most likely more. In Moscow, we also have different opinions. There are those of the diplomatic, the foreign ministry, defense ministry, kind of party of war guys who believe that now is a good time to maybe have a final solution of the Ukrainian problem. And there are those in President Putin's surroundings who believe that that's a bad idea, that Russia will come under very serious economic, financial sanctions, and that's not good, that's bad for internally and externally. And Putin is a kind of balancing between these different opinions, and he has the final solution. Last spring, a really big Russian contingent, I mean, hundreds of thousands were mobilized, and the concentration of forces in the Black Sea and on the Ukrainian border was much higher than today. But Putin didn't give the go-ahead, and we don't have a war in 21, we won't have it. So it's possible that we come to the brink and then retreat from it. But a more consolidating message coming from Washington would be better than hearing different kind of voices.
Alexei, America, if it was up to John Herbst, would definitely have your back. Do you believe that President Joe Biden has the Ukraine's best interests at heart? Do you think he's your guy?
Look, every country is... Well, what I think, Biden knows Ukraine very well. when he was vice president in Obama's administration, he was actually responsible for relations with Ukraine, and he knows Ukraine very well. He knows the reforms process in Ukraine. So he understands Ukraine, I would say that. What we need also to understand is that this is politics, you know, and we don't know what exactly Putin will do, as Pavel said. Putin may be only just, you know, increasing stakes in the gamble, but what he would like to receive, he would decrease the stakes, and he would like to receive something in exchange. That's the whole idea. That's what happened in spring this year. Because I believe that why Putin increased tension is to push through Nord Stream 2. So basically, he created large armament buildup on the border on Ukraine. Then he withdrawn. He said, okay, you see, I'm not going to war. Let's push for Nord Stream 2 instead. So that's what Putin would like to have, I guess. I hope that President Biden and his administration would understand what Putin wants, and they would back Ukraine. Look, Putin would announce peace with Ukraine if Ukraine capitulates, if Ukraine accepts Putin terms of peace. Putin said, okay, I am fine with it. So the problem is that United States and Europe, they do not sacrifice Ukrainian national interests. That's important.
John Herbst, where is NATO in all of this?
Well, NATO, I think, is playing an important role in the current crisis. We've seen an increase in NATO ships in the Black Sea as a way of sending a signal to Moscow. So it clearly has a role. But I think you see an even greater role played by individual NATO countries, starting with the United States, but also Canada, the UK, and Poland and the Baltic nations, who all understand in very clear fashion the threat of what Mr. Putin is up to along Ukraine's borders.
One final comment then from Pavel Fagenhauer. You've heard what John Herbst has to say about NATO's role. Surely that's the one thing that really does anger Vladimir Putin and behind a lot of what is going on right now, surely.
Well, the extension of NATO is seen as the ultimate threat for quite some years already, and that's been the backbone of Putin's foreign policy to resist the NATO extension. But it's not only, of course, NATO. Say, Sweden is not a member of NATO, but it's right now providing help and training help to the Ukrainians. So it's not even more than NATO. It's kind of the West acting to try and balance the Russian pressure on Ukraine. This is what I'm really afraid of, I should say. If the troops begin to move, if somewhere in January both NATO begins to execute its plan 30+30+30 moving actually troops from European countries, from America, actually, to Romania and Poland. Russia begins moving troops. If we go into that stage of the confrontation, it would be very hard to backpedal.
I want to thank all our guests, Alexei Horan, John Herbst and Pavel Fagenhauer. And I want to thank you guys as well for watching. Now, you can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJ Inside Story. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJ Inside Story. From me, Imran Khan, and the whole team here, bye for now.